Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio. Call Timory at 1-888-914-9149. Here's your host, Timory.
Someone recently called my 14-month-old niece toxic. I find this statement just fascinating in today's culture, where people tend to use, quote, toxic relationship or toxic individual to kind of label people or things that they don't really want to deal with. So, of course, I'll give you my take on my niece being called that, but also in general, you know, what can we learn from this phrase toxic relationships, and what can it teach us about our relationships, being intentional with them, not quitting our relationships, but also identifying relationships that aren't so healthy. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. We're going to talk about how transgender individual, he is a he is a man, Will Thomas, who identifies as Leah Thomas, who is identifying as a woman, but is really a man, competed for 3 years in men's swimming, and then started competing as a woman, and went from 500th place as a man to number one as a woman in the Ivy League schools. We'll talk about that in just a moment, and how he now wants to go to the Olympics, but competing as a woman. What does that mean, and where do we find what the church has to say about this whole situation? Also, I'm going to give you the most useful tool for responding to pro-abortion questions. So even if you're a seasoned pro-lifer, new to the debate, maybe you're struggling with how to respond to people, this is a really simple tactic that you can utilize when talking to other people about abortion, when you maybe feel a little overwhelmed or kind of fearful of doing justice to the pro-life position, even though you are pro-life. You should never be afraid of a good conversation with someone who disagrees with you. So I have a tactic for you. Don't go away. We're also going to talk about Detransition Awareness Day that happened this weekend. That is many people voicing and flooding social media over the weekend about how they formerly identified as transgender, and they are sharing their stories. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Okay, so my 14-month-old niece was called toxic recently. A young woman thought that it was okay to refer to her as toxic over and over again. She kept calling my niece, who is, again, 14 months old, can hardly speak, can't even really feed herself. I mean, let's be real. My sister and I had both baby girls literally a week apart from one another. We also got married 2 weeks apart from each other. Total fun. And a couple years later, we just happened to have kids at basically the exact same time. My dad will call them the twins sometimes. So my little niece is called toxic, and I asked my sister, what did you do? Who calls a little kid that? And my reaction was, that's just weird for anyone to refer to a child as toxic. But then I received an email that made me think a little bit more about this. So my question to my sister, what did you do when this woman's calling your daughter toxic? Well, the context was this. There's about a little kid who's about 6 months old, and then there's my niece who's about 14 months old. And of course, what does a 14-month-year-old usually do when they see a 6-month-old? They want to touch them. They want to hold them. They want to kiss them. If you're my daughter, she just wants to hug you and kiss you and kiss you and kiss you and kiss you. Well, so this woman who doesn't have a child is commenting and saying, oh, she's just toxic. And she keeps referring to my niece as, oh, she's toxic. Like, as if something's wrong with my child and how this is a toxic and dangerous situation for the 6-month-old to be in. The reality is, you teach a kid, you work with a kid on how to carefully respect a baby. I digress. So I asked my sister, what did you do? And she's like, well, I kind of just said to her, you know, I really don't think we should be calling a baby toxic. I don't think we should really be calling anyone toxic, but, you know, not a child. The mom hackles go up in that moment. I couldn't even imagine if that happened to me, what I would have said. I thought she handled that very well. But interestingly, I received a email from actually an Instagram message from a mom on social media who said her 17-year-old son has been using that phrase toxic relationship quite a bit. He throws toxic relationship around at her when she believes that she's just trying to parent. She said, "Is toxic relationship over you?" She said, "When I'm trying to teach my kid the difference between parenting and abusing, or hurting versus toxic, this is an important distinction, but with how often young people are hearing, quote, toxic relationship, they tend to label things such as not liking someone who's parenting them when they're an adolescent, a teenager. They use that word toxic relationship. And I think it's interesting because it made me take a deep dive into the phrase toxic relationship. It's something we've heard quite a bit over the last few years, especially when the American Psychological Association, back in I believe 2019, wow, almost about 3 years ago now, labeled masculinity as toxic. Some people are now referring to different types of feminism as toxic feminism. People refer to a relationship as toxic. And it's really a fascinating phrase, and this actually isn't anything new over the last couple of years. It's something that came out in 1972. It was a phrase coined by Voice, which is the Journal of the Academy of Psychotherapists. And in that, they coined the phrase toxic relationships. And what it essentially had to do with, and this is fascinating because this has become very prevalent over the last 15, 20 years with a decline in the family, multiple generations of divorce, people living further and further away from any connectivity within their family. And what's happened is we see people are lonely. People are hungry for relationships. They're starving for relationships. And so sometimes we enter into relationships that we enter into them out of a desire for friendship, a desire to be with someone else, out of a desire for loneliness. And so toxic relationships are considered those relationships that we enter into out of a desire for companionship and friendship, out of a sense of loneliness, and we stay in those relationships even if the relationship is unhealthy for us. Might be, and we'll give some examples in a moment here. The other person is extremely critical, or the relationship's one-sided. You almost end up like a slave. Maybe the other person's passive-aggressive or shames you both in public and privately, is constantly putting you down. Those would be considered relationships that we're entering into out of, again, loneliness or desperation for friendship that we stay in because we are made for community. As human beings, we are social creatures and we're made for relationships. But sometimes we have a hard time making relationships and the right relationships or maintaining the built-in relationships that we have to begin with. In other words, our family. Which is why it's so interesting that this mom wrote to me on Instagram about her 17-year-old son throwing that phrase toxic relationship out at her as she's trying to parent. Because by definition, that's not what a toxic relationship is. And we'll touch in just a minute on identifying toxic relationships, but also, I really think there's a Catholic take on this whole idea of toxic relationships and how to approach them. So, with that definition in mind, when we're hearing about quote toxic people or toxic relationships, I think that the way our culture right now is trying to use this toxic idea is we're trying to use it as a license to dismiss or absolutely disregard other people. And it might be their authority they have over us. It might be the relationship that it is. It might be an excuse for something gone awry in the relationship. And we just label it as toxic without it properly being that that person is actually being harmful to me. And I'm staying because I'm so desperate for a relationship, for connectivity, out of loneliness. I'm sticking around and I'm allowing that status quo behavior to continue. And so we could see the words toxic relationship. We hear that thrown out with regard to many respects, especially for the younger generations, having to do with parents, a toxic relationship. My parents were toxic. Teacher relationships. You're also starting to hear that a lot from millennials on down when it comes to bosses. It was a toxic relationship. Why? Because they told you what to do, or maybe they're just a bad boss. You even hear that, toxic relationship with your colleagues, friends, coworkers. in as well. We hear this used within the context of family. But here's one of the problems with the way toxic relationship is being used by us is that it ignores the purpose of relationship. As I mentioned, properly speaking, the phrase toxic relationship that was coined by The Voice, which is the journal of, by the Academy of Psychotherapists, that refers to those relationships that we're staying into out of desperation, that are harmful towards us. And they're relationships that we're entering into out of loneliness. They're not our familial relationships that we're born into. And so this is what's wrong with the fact that we're ignoring the purpose of relationship and how we're wrongly using the words toxic relationship to get out of situations of authority or to get out of situations of familial connectivity. You see, properly speaking, toxic relationships has to do with people who are emotionally, verbally, or physically abusive in some way or another. Maybe they're a bad example on you, or maybe they're even causing or encouraging you to sin. Of course, recognizing we always have to take ownership of our own sin. But here are some examples. Maybe a friend who always trash talks their husband, and then because you continue to spend time around that person, well, you start bashing your spouse as well. A true toxic relationship would be, let's say, a parent who is an absolute alcoholic, and it is damaging for you to be around that individual because it is causing harm to you for you. Of course, that would be considered an unhealthy, toxic, familial relationship. But different from the toxic relationship properly defined today, that is relationships we're choosing out of a sense of desperation. You see, toxic relationships, properly speaking, in a certain respect are our fault because we're not willing to walk away or set up a boundary because we desire connectivity. We desire friendship. We desire familial interactions with people who are familiar and like us and who we want to grow with, who we want to give and receive with. So here's what's interesting. I've talked very often about Aristotle, the great philosopher predating Christ, the time of Christianity, at the same time as we have, revelation of God being handed down through the Israelites. The Greeks were reasoning through, well, what does it mean to be a good human being? What does it mean to be an excellent human being? And one of the philosophers pondering this was Aristotle. And he talks about three levels of friendship in his book, The Nicomachean Ethics, 10 out of 10 recommend reading. Well, in the Nicomachean Ethics, he talks about three kinds of friendship. And those three kinds of friendship are friendships of utility. That is where the basis of the friendship is where you are using the other person. And when the other person is no longer usable, the friendship fizzles away, or vice versa. The other person might be using you. Second type of friendship is a friendship of pleasure, where perhaps the other person enjoys being with you because you got a lot of really fun toys. You got all kinds of things to go ride the sand dunes, and you have all the stuff to go out to the river. And let's say you no longer have any of that stuff. Let's say you lose your house, you lose all your things. Well, people stop spending time with you because they were only enjoying that relationship with you for what you had to offer that was fun. That would be a friendship of pleasure. The basis of the relationship was pleasure, lacking depth. The third type of friendship is a friendship of virtue, where the understanding is that our friendships are meant to make us better human beings, that we are more interested in the well-being of the other person in that relationship, and thereby we are bringing out the best in ourselves. So much so, you wouldn't even complain about the other person unless the complaint was directly to that person and it was constructive criticism, that is feedback that was something they could actually change and work on, not just complaining for the sake of complaining. So many of the great theologians and saints before us, I even think of Saint John of the Cross and Saint John Paul the Great, talk about the importance of virtue in relationships, that we're seeing other people as an end to be sought after, a person to be loved and engaged with, rather than someone to be taken and used for our own desire, for our own pleasure, for our own happiness. And it's really important we're talking about these different types of relationships. But as I was thinking about this whole toxic relationship idea, and if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. If you're not able to join us for the full conversation, head over to relevantradio.com/trending and catch this podcast later on, or you can subscribe wherever you catch your podcasts. So when we're talking about toxic relationships, is also thinking about how this is thrown out very easily. You're toxic. You'll hear even many adult children today telling their parents that, well, you're toxic, and they're cutting off, they're severing any interaction with them. It's referred to as adult children going, quote, no contact. But I was also pondering how there's a balance between not quitting on relationships, truly loving other people, and setting boundaries that are important for our well-being. Yes, that word, our self-care. I hate that phrase sometimes. That there is an important distinction, that we're not on two opposite ends of the spectrum, quitting a relationship, or that we're also not just enduring damaging interactions with other people. And it made me think about two really hot button words today: tolerance and toxic. And there are two, and I'd like to kind of think of these in two different dimensions. Tolerance would be if we're really tolerating people, according to the proper definition of tolerance, that would mean that we're almost suffering for and or with another individual. Tolerance is sort of, if we think about it, the fact that a camel has a much higher tolerance for not drinking water than a human being does. He can endure and suffer and keep going. Versus us, we need water. We become dehydrated at a certain point. You start to get sick, and you could even die from dehydration. So tolerance is one thing, and our whole culture is all about preaching tolerance. But on the other end of the spectrum is this idea of toxic, where a relationship is toxic, and so we just need to shout out or shout down someone else who exists, or just cut them off, sever the relationship, block them completely. We were talking recently here on Trending about how we live in a culture where you can just block someone on social media, delete their number from your phone, block it so that they can't contact you. And I think there's nothing wrong with blocking people who are harmful. I've done it. I do it. There's some people who just harass. But it's important that we're seeing that sometimes the way we use that does psychologically impact how we interact in relationships. And when we don't like what another person says or thinks, or the authority even of a relationship with a parent or with a boss or with the church, a church leader, that we then suddenly label that as toxic just because we don't like it. Just because we don't like what someone else says doesn't mean what they say or who they are or what the relationship is toxic. The reality is that if something is truly toxic, it's harmful. Versus if we're actually tolerating something, we're suffering with it. So in our relationships, we need to apply, when we're talking about toxic relationships, whether something is something that we're tolerating and that we're suffering with and even for that person as they're growing through, working through what's going on in them, because maybe they're a family member. And again, tolerance, even if that means we're suffering with them, because it's a proper definition of tolerance, if we're suffering with them, that doesn't mean that we just make excuses for behavior. It might mean that we are calling them out in the midst of things. But toxic is where we're being harmed, and that's what we shouldn't stand for. And so that's a difference that I think is so important that we're distinguishing. But if we apply the golden rule of sacred scripture, looking to the words of our Lord Jesus Christ in Matthew chapter 7, he says, "So whatever you wish that men would do to you, do so to them, for this is the law and the prophets." This is where Jesus Christ is reminding us, do unto others as you would have done to you. So one of the best rules, the golden rule that is often referred to from sacred scripture and Jesus Christ's teaching, you see, don't do things to other people that you don't want done to you. And I think this whole idea of cutting people off because a relationship's toxic is a reminder that maybe we shouldn't enter into a relationship just out of desperation, just out of loneliness, because that's us using someone else. I don't want to be used, so why would I use another person? We should challenge ourselves and convict ourselves when entering into relationships, especially out of loneliness. But also, we should be aware that we shouldn't just quit on people. We shouldn't block them out. Boundaries are important. But just shutting off all communication, there is a balance. At a certain point, or maybe for a certain season, that might be necessary. I have people who have not respected boundaries, who have been damaging. Yes, I have had, I can think of a couple of people who had, gotten my phone number, and just it was very just being harassed. It was a harassment situation. You block them. You block them on your phone, block them from your contacts. Sometimes, yes, that is necessary, but there's a difference between quitting on people and having a boundary when you've tried to establish a boundary time and time again. This is where, as Christians, we are called to show mercy, to be just in our relationships. Remember, justice is giving to others what is their due. That is what we owe them. Charity is going beyond that, of giving more than what we owe to an individual, but giving ourselves to them, giving our own portion to another individual. And so when we're talking about relationships and discerning whether or not a relationship is actually toxic and how to handle this phrase, quote, toxic relationship, and maybe even teach our kids how to understand them when they maybe label up another parent or a teacher, or even, us as you're an adult and you're entering into the workforce, if you're thinking, oh, this boss relationship with my boss is toxic, think again. What's the proper order of that relationship? Am I calling it toxic because I don't like what they have to say, or are they actually being harmful to me, and do I need to address that? But then also remembering the culture of tolerance, that phrase. What does tolerance mean? To be tolerant of another in a certain respect is to suffer with and or for them. I love the idea of tolerance. It gives us opportunity to love people and actually get over ourselves for a moment and suck up some of our frustration, our complaints, our uneasiness for the sake of others. Maybe even telling them things that they need to hear that are uncomfortable for us to say. So the challenge is this: as we hear this phrase toxic relationship thrown around, we need to ask, can I suffer with this situation, with this friendship? Should I? What is best for me and what is best for the individual? And I think that at the heart of that, we'll discover the true balance of knowing and understanding how to better handle our relationships in a culture that just wants to say, oh, be tolerant of everyone, or oh, cut someone off if you need to, or oh, just block them, or just label it as toxic and move along. We can't quit on people, but we also can't just allow ourselves to be bombarded with the damaging experiences. Now, this is where, again, we need to apply that golden rule. So, whatever you wish that men would do to you, do so to them. You're listening to Trending with Tim Marie here on Relevant Radio. I'll be back and I'm going to give you the best tactic for how to address a pro-abortion argument and respond with ease without having to be afraid or uncomfortable or have all the right answers. We're also going to talk about Detransition Day, how social media has been flooded over the weekend with people who formerly identified as transgender, now reclaiming their identity according to their biological sex. You're listening to Trending with Tim Marie here on Relevant Radio. Will a biological male compete as a female in the future Olympics? We'll talk about that too.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, so I want to talk about the major trend that occurred over the weekend on social media, and that is the hashtag Detrans Awareness Day, detransitioning from the transition that anyone who struggles with gender dysphoria is encouraged to do. Whether you're 8 years old, 16-year-old, or a 30-year-old, we are pumping people with cross-sex hormones, with cross-sex surgeries, irreversible surgeries that do permanent damage to the body, especially in the case of a child who hasn't been through puberty. We're talking about puberty-blocking cross-sex hormone, so-called therapy, taking hormones of the opposite sex and hormones to suppress your biological sex, things such as estrogen and testosterone and progesterone. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. Before we get there, this is why this is such a big deal, because this week we are about to see the face-off of Will Thomas, a swimmer out of University of Pennsylvania, who identifies as a woman but as a man. For 3 years, he competed as a man against the men. And in fact, in areas that he's now decimating women, he was in 554th place in the 200 freestyle. Again, for 3 years competing as a man against other men. Now, after 3 years of competing as a man, this year he's competing as a woman because according to the NCAA rules, he's allowed to because he took testosterone suppressing drugs for a year. And although the NCAA guidelines are changing, they're making an exception still for Will Thomas, who's identifying as Leah Thomas, who is a man, not a woman. No matter how many times you see him misgendered online because they're lying about who he actually is, he's still a man. Doesn't matter how many cross-sex hormones, doesn't matter what kind of biological, physiological surgeries or interventions you have, he is a man. We'll talk about that, especially from the perspective of the church. But here's the deal. In competing against women over this last year, decimating women, so many women on his sports team are afraid to speak up, speaking anonymously or not at all. In fact, international champions and Olympians in sports have been speaking out on behalf of these poor women who have lost championships, scholarships, lost the very last of their competitions against a man because we think that it's okay to put men in women's sports. Now, some have said that, well, he felt disconnected with himself, you know, all the way back into high school, he says, and even saying that he felt depressed, you know, in college. All of this used to justify not just him transitioning, but to justify him stealing championships and beating women in women's sports just because he felt disconnected and depressed. That's terrible. I'm sorry he felt that way, but that does not mean that we should succumb to calling him Leah Thomas, should succumb to calling him he, she, or whatever he would like to be called. That does not mean that he should get to compete against women, because it's not good for him, who suffered from feeling disconnected with himself and depressed. And it's not good for the women. Now, it's interesting, he's recently stated, and by the way, if I didn't mention this already, he was 554th place in the 200 freestyle. Now, competing against women, guess what? He is breaking records. He has the fastest time in the nation. Because no matter what, even if you suppress testosterone, even if you play with chemical levels of the body, that, yes, are in part of what it means to be male or what it means to be female, that's not all. You can't just play with some chemicals and hormones and say, oh, psh, there, you're a woman. Can't have a child. And even if his body was reconstructed so that he could carry a child that was created outside of the womb artificially, and then somehow we were able to construct a womb on him, that doesn't make him a woman. That doesn't, just because perhaps scientifically we've achieved a new level of so-called achievement in technology, medical technology, is that he could carry a child. It's not true. And even those instances where you hear, oh, hey, a man carried a child, it's always a woman who's transitioned to, in some way, identifying as taking cross-sex hormones or cross-sex surgery. Like, man, it's always a biological woman. I'll never forget, I was sitting at the dinner table with some friends, and one of whom he totally knew better. He's like, yeah, did you hear that man's pregnant? And I'm like, oh man, come on, you know better. It's like, I mean, you know, the woman who identifies as a man. So, okay, thank you. We've got to be clear with our terms so that other people know and understand what's true. But here's what's interesting. Will Thomas, who's identifying as Leah Thomas, crushing women's records, still continuing to compete, and we'll see him at the finals for the NCAA coming up this week, actually all week, I believe, competing through the 16th through the 19th of March. Well, he has now said he's got his eyes, his sight is set on the Olympics, 2024 Olympics. In fact, it's already been announced the women's Olympic team would welcome him with open arms. Now, according to the new 2021 guidelines for the International Olympics Committee, he qualifies. Now, it's actually really fascinating if you read the latest guidelines for the International Olympic Committee that came out last year, because they have to find themselves in an absolute war surrounding this gender ideology, and they've caved. But I also appreciate, on a certain respect, something they did. So listen to this. They have 10 rules that guide whether or not someone who identifies as transgender can compete on the team of the opposite biological sex. And listen to this. This is all trans inclusionary language. If they have, because these are the words they use, these are 10 rules: inclusion, prevention of harm, non-discrimination, fairness, No presumption of advantage, evidence-based approach, primacy of health and bodily autonomy, stakeholder-centered approach, right to privacy, and periodic review. What the heck does that mean? These are the 10 rules. These aren't even rules. Inclusion, fairness, prevention of harm, non-discrimination, evidence-based approach. This is very ambiguous. It says anything goes and anyone can compete in whatever sport. Now, they are kind of trying to make it sound like, well, it has to be fair and, you know, it does need to be based on merit. I hope so. But how is it based on merit if from the time for 3 years in college, he competed against men? So he it's not based on merit. He didn't compete for years against women, beating other women out. He competed against men, losing to wet men, and then for 1 year competed as a woman, and now suddenly he thinks in 2 years he can go to the Olympics competing against women who have probably been competing in swimming for their entire lives, all the way from like age 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, at least in the case of swimming, and other sports, perhaps even younger. You see, this is what's interesting about the International Olympic Committee. They changed their rules for the first time in 6 years. In 2015, the guideline had to do with testosterone suppressors. And if they were able to get the testosterone at a certain level, that is what qualified a biological male to compete against women. But in this instance, I do find it interesting that doesn't sound like they are making that a requirement in their new 10 rules for the International Olympic Committees allowing someone who identifies as the opposite sex to compete with the opposite sex. And that's what's, I think, in one respect, I do say that's a good thing because that means that the International Olympics Committee is not supporting, per se, requiring harmful cross-sex hormones. They call it cross-sex therapy, hormone replacement therapy. It's damaging. Whether you're an adolescent or an adult, cross-sex hormones, anytime you play with hormones, it's not good. No, it should be that we are using incredible medical technologies to help in the instances where someone's sick, in the instance where progesterone is administered to a woman because she has low progesterone levels, because low progesterone levels lead to miscarriage. That was my instance. Thank God I was able to get the progesterone I needed. That was just a good reason to use a hormone where there's something going wrong that needs to be fixed. But there's nothing wrong with a human being. Just because you're struggling with depression, anxiety, or feeling disconnected with yourself doesn't make you suddenly the opposite sex. And no physical manipulation or mutilation of the body, no hormonal shot or drug or pill is going to change that disunity and confusion. That's why I want to share with you in just a little bit about this detransition day that occurred on social media. All these people, all these young people who for a couple years, for 3 years, for 4 years, for 1 year, transitioned to the opposite sex, maybe with an actual sex change surgery. So-called sex change surgery, maybe with cross-sex hormones, maybe just through a, quote, social transition where you just ask people to call you by a different name and a different pronoun. But they're sharing their stories, and it's profound. And I want to share some of these stories with you in just a moment because it's something so important that you hear these young people, 18, 19 years old, one after another, sharing their stories in droves about how they were suffering, how they were struggling, and the answer they thought would be the answer was not the answer. And how now, after detransitioning, after being encouraged to transition to the opposite sex and then going back to their biological sex, how now they are happy, now they are at peace with themselves, and how they understand now they were experiencing what's known as gender dysphoria. I'll be right back here on Trending with Timory. Don't go away because you need to hear this.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
As we talked about Leah Thomas, who is a man who is identifying as a woman and is beating and crushing women in women's sports, was 554th when he competed for 3 years at University of Pennsylvania against men now is number one in breaking and creating national records for time in the 200 freestyle as he competes against women. Of course he's winning. Even when you suppress testosterone, this is a common known fact, you still have an unfair advantage because your testosterone levels are still higher even when it's suppressed. And you still have a biological, physiological advantage, everything from endurance to the way the body is structured to make you a more competitive athlete against other men. So while we're talking about this, though, I want to share with you the incredible stories of what happened this weekend on social media. This weekend, we saw social media absolutely flooded with the hashtag D-Trans Awareness Day. You have to check these out. I'll post a link on social media on my Twitter at Tim Ray. Follow me at Tim Ray. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Incredible stories shared by young men in particular and young women, especially many young women who are sharing their testimonies. Let me share with you just some of these. One shared on social media, when I was 15, lonely and hated my body, I got sucked into gender ideology online. My school encouraged me and I was easily prescribed a high dose of testosterone at 18 and it was very damaging. The photo, a before and after, on the left there's a photo of her as she was identifying as a boy and on testosterone. On the right, a beautiful photo of her smiling and happy. God bless her and those who are willing to share their story. Another story that you have to hear. On Twitter, Grace. My name is Grace and I detransitioned. On the left is me shortly after top surgery. That is where a woman has her breasts literally chopped off. And let's think about this for just a moment. I don't even know if she'll ever actually be able to breastfeed a child. She won't down the road if she has children. And if she can have reconstructive surgery to reconstruct what was there before, but and let's just think about the reality. This is long-term permanent damage done to her body. She said, this was the darkest time in my life. On the right is me recently. She said, life goes on, life gets better. She looks happy and she's sharing her story. She doesn't look happy in her selfie after she had top surgery in 2017. Praise God, she's willing to share her story. Another female, because as we've discussed many times here on Trending, it's a trend that's especially occurring right now among young women who are rejecting their bodies. It's become the latest fad, just like an eating disorder has been a fad, or cutting yourself. You know, social outcasts, people who are struggling, lonely, depressed, they are being sucked into this ideology. Here's Lumi on Twitter. She said, this is me in 2019 on the left and me today on the right. I feel like life is back in the day. She said, I feel like back in the day I was not, but a caricature of myself, depressed, unhappy, non-functioning, and suicidal. She says, today my smile is genuine. We finally got some sun in Finland. Back then it was just acne. She shows how one photo when she was identifying as a boy was fake sun, and here she is with sun rays beams across her face from, you know, shades kind of creating that line, those lines on her face. She has real sun. Here she is happy in identifying according to her actual biological reality. Jesse on Twitter said, I heard it's D-Trans Awareness Day. Should the LGBT community online brainwash me into thinking my confusion and pain was gender dysphoria at 16 to 18? She says, I'm so grateful I only socially transitioned. At 24, I'm happy, thriving, feminine. She said, I love being a woman and was never anything else. Another person who shares their story, one after another after another, Watson on Twitter says, I began detransition October 2019 by ceasing my testosterone injections and returning to my birth name. The most common question I got from those new to this discussion is, why did you transition in the first place? She says, like other trans people, I transitioned because I was suffering from gender dysphoria. She said, we're told people with dysphoria are treated with transition, right? But unlike other trans people, transition didn't help me. She said, the second most common question she hears is, why did you detransition? She says, I detransitioned because I experienced extreme transition regret, realizing that my desire to become a man stemmed from a variety of factors that ultimately led me to want to be someone else, not my authentic self, but someone and something else entirely. She said it was an escape. She said my transition was fueled by my self-hatred, not self-acceptance. She said I didn't want to be Sinead, which was her name, because I hated Sinead. Sinead was a woman. I wanted no part in that anymore. I'd become Sean, a man, and I'd feel better, or so I hoped. She goes on and on to share her story. She goes on to say, I never thought I'd ever accept myself, but I do. And I've never been happier. She says, to anyone struggling with transition regret, you're absolutely not alone. Recovery is possible. And she invites people to direct message her, to share with her. Anyone who needs a rock to lean on. As she said, as my rocks once did for me. She's saying people need help. People need the truth. People need to be able to say, I regret my transition. People need to be able to hear that when they detransition, they're happier. They never thought they'd be feminine. They never thought they'd love themselves. These are the stories of young men and women who've been lied to over and over again. Helena on Twitter said, when I was 15, lonely and hated my body, I got sucked into gender ideology online. Again, my school encouraged me and I was easily prescribed a high dose of testosterone. You see, this is so easily done, even in the states such as Oregon. Planned Parenthood, the larger abortion provider in the United States, actually gives cross-sex hormones with no parental notification to minors in the state of Oregon. Some states are also getting away with this for other reasons and other ways, skirting the law, skirting parental rights and notification. Because today, this whole phrase, terminology, bodily autonomy, in choice. They're not just using it to allow minors to have abortion, but also for people to start using harmful and damaging cross-sex hormones and medical intervention that is damaging, that does harm, not good. But where can we be in the midst of all of this? As Will Thomas, who identifies as Leah Thomas, who is a man but says he's a woman, competes and decimates in women's sports, the Ivy League level, and now says he wants to go to the Olympics in 2024, competing on the United States women's swim team. Or as we hear the stories of all of these young people whose stories will probably be silenced on social media, whose stories people don't want to hear, yet they're sharing the reality and the truth of biological reality of discovering happiness, not with a band-aid of cross-sex hormones. Where do we stand as a church? We have to tell the truth. And we have to tell it over and over again. It's not easy. People criticize us. They may call you transphobic or whatever that might be. But just stand with me a moment, recognizing and pondering what the church teaches. We know that God created us male and female. We read in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 369, man and woman have been created, which is to say, willed by God, on the one hand, in perfect equality as human persons, on the other, in their respective beings as man and woman. Being man or being woman is a reality which is good and willed by God. The Catechism of the Catholic Church goes on to say, man and woman possess an inalienable dignity which comes to them immediately from God, their creator. Man and woman are both with one and the same dignity in the image of God. In their being man and being woman, they reflect the creator's wisdom and goodness. You see, man and women have been created and willed by God. And you, if you were created male or female, if you, someone you know was created male or female, they were intentionally created that way. We read later on in the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 2332, sexuality affects all aspects of the human person in the unity of his body and soul. Do you hear that? What the church teaches, what our theology teaches, that our sexuality, being made either male or female, it affects all aspects of who we are as people in the very unity of what we are as body and soul. Not one or the other. We can't say, oh, well, my soul identifies as female, but my body is male or vice versa. That's what initially when Bruce Jenner, who now identifies as Caitlyn Jenner, when he did his first interviews, his coming out interview, his transitioning, he said his soul was female. Well, that contradicts the very theology, the very truth of who we are as human beings. Our body and soul are integrated. They're not separated. We're not disjointed human beings. We're not living to our fullest capacity. We're not living according to how we were created. If we try to separate body and soul, we are one. So when the soul suffers, the body suffers, and the body suffers, the soul can suffer too. And going on in the catechism, it says it especially concerns effectively the capacity to love and to procreate, which we know. Being made as male and female, body and soul, that impacts our capacity to have children and to love each other. In a more general way, the aptitude for forming bonds of communion with others in our maleness and femaleness, this doesn't just have to do with the biological reality of how children are made and how we enter into marriages. It actually impacts the very bonds of how we enter into relationships with others, mother-daughter relationships, father-son relationships, sister relationships. Our biological sex impacts all of these. I mean, just think about it. I have a radically different relationship with my brother than I do with my sisters. I have a totally different relationship with my dad than I do my mom. And yes, that actually does come down to sex differences. It's a huge part of it. The Catechism of the Catholic Church goes on to say this: everyone, man and woman, should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. Did you hear that? Everyone, man and woman, should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. Even if we're not struggling with gender dysphoria, we should strive to become more a man if you were a man, and more a woman, more feminine if you were a female. Everyone, man and woman, should acknowledge and accept this sec his sexual identity. Catechism goes on to say in paragraph 2333, says physical, moral, and spiritual differences and complementarity are oriented toward the goods of marriage and the flourishing of family life. The harmony of the couple and of society depends in part on the way in which complementarity, needs, and mutual support between the sexes are lived out. You hear that? The very harmony of society is dependent upon the way men and women relate to one another. The way men and women have needs as man or as woman, and how we mutually support each other. These sex differences also make up the very good and orient toward marriage and family life. We talked a lot, especially here on Trending, about this crisis of loneliness and isolation, especially if you read so many of the stories in this Detransition Awareness Day. These are kids who are crying out, who are alone, depressed, in feeling anxious and rejecting themselves and their very identity. What could help them? What would help to provide an answer to the crisis they were experiencing? Understanding that they were made in God's image and likeness, created intentionally, called to accept this biological, physiological reality that influences all the way to the depths of their souls. And that in family life, where we're meant to learn unconditional love, that this is nourished and fostered and grows, and this is how we continue to perpetuate who we are as male and female. And it's so important that we tell the truth, even in the face of the ideologies facing us, in the discord that may occur between us and others, when talking about the truth and reality of who we are as men, who we are as women, created in God's image and likeness. You're listening to Trending with Timmeri here on Relevant Radio. Tomorrow, I'll walk us through that tactic you need in order to respond to any pro-life argument that comes your way. It's simple. You don't have to have all the right answers. You just need to understand this one simple tool. This is Timmeri from Trending with Timmeri. Wednesday is our weekly Gentleman's Hour on Trending. Ask any question you'd like, questions that you otherwise wouldn't ask your mom or sister, you can ask on Trending with a faith-filled perspective. We're also going to walk through the pro-life tactic that will help you in any pro-life debate you find yourself in. It's simple, it's easy, you don't have to have all the right answers. This will help you as we face possibly the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So join me at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.